The House will come to order. Please stand. This morning, the flag salute will be read. The flag salute will be led by Representative Hovey. Representative?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing. The opening ceremony will be presented by Lieutenant Colonel Richard Sirianni. He is wing chaplain of the 142nd Fighter Wing Oregon Air National Guard and a guest of Speaker Hunt. Lieutenant.
Let us pray. Eternal and merciful God, you are the author and sustainer of our lives. You pursue us with untiring love and always desire the best for the human family. We place before you our needs and trust in your loving kindness. Bless our great country, our state, and its leaders. Give them the wisdom to discern the correct path during these challenging times. In a special way today, we remember the Oregon military that sacrificed their lives for our country in Iraq and Afghanistan. Each young man, each young woman is more than a name, more than a symbol. In death, as in life, they are important to family, friends, and community. We pray for those who have been left behind. Be the unseen and powerful presence in the homes of those who have lost loved ones. Mend broken hearts and fill them with courage. May their memories and our compassion give them comfort. We pray also for those who remain in harm's way and for those who have come home to us broken in so many ways. Keep them ever in our minds and strengthen our resolve to bring them healing. Help our congressional leaders in all that they do. Gift them courage, memory, and purpose. Use their words and works to give a voice to the fearful, food and shelter to the needy, and hope to those who are most vulnerable. We join all people of goodwill as we pray for peace in our world. Amen.
Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel. You may be seated. We now move to the order of courtesies, and we'll begin by recognizing for a moment in history Representative Call. Perhaps. Okay, let's move on. We'll see if we can come back to a moment in history. We'll have new history. We want to extend courtesies of the House of Representatives to the Gilkey International Middle School. A number of their students are sitting with representatives and on the side aisle. Welcome, and we're glad to have you here learning about the process. Would you please stand if you're from the Gilkey School? Welcome. Courtesies are extended to you. Thank you very much. And now we recognize Representative Cannon under the order of courtesies, please. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it's in fact a high honor and privilege to extend courtesies to two members of the British Parliament who are joining us today, Colin Challen and Lord Oxbury. And if you would stand and be recognized in the side aisle. Colin Challen, Member of Parliament, is a member of several of the UK Parliament's Environment and Energy Committees, and Lord Oxburgh, a scientist and member of the House of Lords, are in the Capitol today representing the British American Parliamentary Group. Mr. Challen was a small business owner running a printing and publishing business before entering politics as an organizer for the Labour Party. Lord Oxburgh is a geologist who has taught at Oxford and Cambridge and served as the chief scientific advisor to the Ministry of Defense. They're here today to meet with the governor and with legislators about issues related to energy, climate, and the economy. And colleagues, I invite you to join Representative Bailey and myself for a brown bag lunch in room 360 today to discuss these issues with our honored guests and engage in an exchange of ideas and information. Again, an honor to host you here. Welcome to the capital of Oregon, and we very much are honored by your visit. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cannon. We extend warm courtesies and a welcome to our very honored guests. Thank you for coming today. Today, our honorary pages are guests of me by coincidence, and I've asked Representative Gilliam if he would please introduce them.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my honor, and just before I do that, if you'll allow me to introduce a young man who is an intern in our office. He's sitting with me today. His name is Tim Hastie, and Tim is a junior at Western Oregon. He's a political science major, and he's also an ROTC cadet. And Tim aspired, because of his interest in political science and in government, to come to this building and to participate at the very highest level of power, to be at the very core of our democracy. And unfortunately, he was assigned to my office. But I hope that you will welcome Tim, because we're glad he's here. Now, Mr. Speaker, to your group.
Yes, thank you. To our group.
Our group. Our honorary pages. I'd like them to stand as I read their name and tell you just a little bit about them. First, we have Bridgie Hernandez. Bridgie, and I should mention, all of these students are from Baker Prairie Middle School. She's 14, and she's very interested in criminal justice. Next is Josh Geiger. Josh likes track. He's involved in student government, student newspaper, law enforcement, and he's possibly interested in the SWAT team. Next is Bibiana Duran Mata. She's interested in nursing, she just told me this morning. Welcome. Sabrina Campos is with us. Creative writing, science, also nursing are her interests. Yesenia Zamora, who I think I might owe a Coke to because I goofed her name up. Leadership, science, and track are her interests, and she hopes to become a veterinarian. Savannah Heron is here with us. Soccer, art, and choir are her activities, and she's interested in being a newscaster or a dentist. I like that variety. Evan Troxell is here. Because of his involvement in the TAG program, he has lots of interests and activities. He's a web leader for new students, and there are some, including Evan, who don't have a clear career path. And, of course, those are the students that I admire the most. Alex Hartzell is here. Alex is interested in cooking, and she's hoping to be a chef, and this is a very cool profession, or a chocolatier. Welcome, Alex. Jacob Phillips is with us. Jacob is a board member of 4-H. He's in the Builders Club. He's been part of the film festival up there at Baker Prairie Middle School, and he wants to produce and direct movies. Glad you're here. And lastly, we've got Jessica Caballo, and she, also from Baker Prairie Middle, is still thinking about her options. So welcome to all of you. We're glad you're here. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Gilliam, for the courtesy. And courtesies are extended to their teacher, Lynn Olson, and to our honorary pages. Going back to a moment in history, Representative Call. Call. Representative Call, moment in history, please, sir.
Sorry.
Apology accepted. Let's proceed.
Beatrice Morrow Kennedy was the most noted civil rights activist in the early 20th century Oregon.
Do you want three?
Using using her position as editor of The Advocate, Oregon's largest African-American newspaper, Kennedy launched numerous efforts to defend the civil liberties of approximately 2,500 African-Americans in the state during the 1930s and to challenge racial discrimination in its varied forms. Born in 1890 in Lytic, Texas, she graduated from Wiley College in 1908, worked briefly as a teacher in Oklahoma, and then enrolled in the University of Chicago. In 1912, she left for Portland to marry Edward Daniel Kennedy, the founder and editor of The Advocate. Beatrice Kennedy became assistant editor of the newspaper, beginning an affiliation that would continue for the next 22 years. She would become the editor and owner of The Advocate in 1929. In 1921, Kennedy became the first African-American woman to graduate from Northwestern College of Law in Portland. She was only one of two women in a class of 22. Kennedy became a founding member of the Portland NAACP and quickly emerged as its most powerful voice when she directed the local protest against the controversial anti-black film, The Birth of a Nation. Through the pages of The Advocate, Kennedy confronted the racial discrimination routinely practiced by restaurants, hotels, and movie theaters in Oregon and the Pacific Northwest. She successfully challenged the exclusion of African-American children from public schools in Longview, Washington, and Vernonia, Oregon, and kept her readers informed of Ku Klux Klan activity throughout the state. Kennedy also assumed the role of unofficial ambassador of racial goodwill, writing articles, giving lectures, and using the new medium of radio to promote African-American history and racial equality. In 1929, her efforts were recognized nationally when she was nominated for the Harmon Award in Race Relations, given by the Harmon Foundation in New York City. Kennedy's activism extended beyond race to issues of peace and justice. In 1932, she ran unsuccessfully for the office of state representative for District 5, Multnomah County. 4 years later, she left Oregon and public life and moved to Los Angeles. Kennedy died there in 1974. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Call. Also, a special note, today is happy birthday to Representative Vicki Berger. Recognize Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good morning, colleagues. I have the pleasure this morning of introducing some of the 160 members of the AmeriCorps who are here visiting the Capitol today. I'd ask you all to stand. I know there's some behind me I can't see. Please stand up for a moment. In Oregon today, over 850 AmeriCorps volunteers and members are addressing critical needs in the areas of education, public safety, the environment, and unmet human needs. AmeriCorps members are addressing our state's challenges head-on. They are serving in food banks, engaging young people in service activities, developing community gardens and environmental education programs, conducting emergency preparedness training, and much, much more. AmeriCorps members who serve full-time receive a modest living allowance, health insurance, and importantly, an education award that can be used towards further education or repayment of their student loans. They work with national nonprofit organizations, faith-based organizations, and local organizations to serve both urban and rural communities. For AmeriCorps Day at the Capitol, the 160 members have gathered from across Oregon to share their stories of service with you today. Colleagues, please welcome these fine students and welcome them to the Capitol. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Hannah. Recognize Representative Cowan, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm a visual aid. Y'all see the nice shiny new blue books on your desk? Well, we have the honor of having the photographers with us today, and I would like to take this opportunity to, if you would step to the side aisle there, to introduce you to Joseph Drew of Coos Bay, and he took the photo Shore Acres Sunset along one of the beautiful Oceanside trails in Shore Acres Park near Charleston on the southern Oregon coast. Okay, not quite my district, but just a little south of there. His photo was selected as the front cover for the brand new 2009-2010 Oregon Blue Book. Joseph is a geologist. He and his wife, Jessica, who joins him today, reside in Coos Bay and enjoy the beautiful Oregon coast all the way up and down, right? Thank you. Please make him welcome.
Thank you and welcome. Also, yes, Representative Wingert, please.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, if you'll look at your blue book on the back page, I want to introduce you to a couple of my constituents on the side aisle. This photograph was taken by Jean Noren. Dr. Jean Noren and her husband David, they're both here today because her photo's on the back cover of the blue book entitled Wine in a Web. It's of Pinot Noir grapes covered by a spider web. Jean has a passion for nature photography and has received awards and honors from the New York Institute of Photography, the Nature Photographers of the Pacific Northwest, and the Columbia Council of Camera Clubs. Her work has been selected for exhibition in the state and international divisions of the Oregon State Fair. Dr. Noren and her husband David live in Gaston. Jean is an internal medicine physician in Forest Grove, where her photos are on display. David is a lawyer in Hillsborough. It's a beautiful photograph. I hope you all agree, colleagues, and I welcome them to the Capitol today. Congratulations.
Welcome to the Capitol. Thank you very much. Continuing under the order of courtesies, Representative Clem, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As you already welcomed the Gilkey students, I'll just mention that I've got one, Rita, next to me. But I did want to welcome a group of farmers who are here from a bunch of different counties over here in the side aisle from all over Oregon, and they're here to help on a couple bills and say a couple things they don't like and meet with legislators to talk about what's going on with one of our most valuable, if not, in my opinion, the most valuable industry, agriculture, here in Oregon. And so this is the folks on the side aisle. I'd also like you to extend a happy birthday, as I had our whole committee do, to my staff person. Unbeknownst to him, he walked in to deliver something, and we all broke into happy birthday, but he and Representative from West Salem share a birthday, Dan Baum, over in the side aisle.
Thank you, Representative Clem. We welcome your guests. Welcome to the House of Representatives. Next, Representative Riley will be introducing Representative Riley, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've already talked about the AmeriCorps folks here, and former Representative Ralph Brown is currently serves as the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action of Service, and they administer the Oregon AmeriCorps program. Mr. Speaker, I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and courtesies of the House of the floor be extended to former Representative Ralph Brown.
Okay. I'm sorry, I've lost my... Oh, here it is. Thank you. Representative Riley requests unanimous consent the rules be suspended and courtesies of the House and floor be extended to former Representative Ralph Brown. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Returning to the order of courtesies, further courtesies, Representative Garrod.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues sitting up in the gallery, up above you are 20 students representing the Triad School from Klamath Falls, and we'd like to welcome to their Oregon legislature today.
Welcome. Thank you. Recognize Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to introduce to you today, actually Senator Johnson's job shadow, but she's one of the Gilkey students. Her name is Sarah Pahmi. She's an eighth grader at the school, and she lives in Beaverton. Please make her welcome. And I also have six members of my Tillamook PUD here today, and I'm not sure they're in the gallery, but if they are, they'd be up in this area. And they're very welcome today, too.
Thank you, Representative Boone. We welcome your guests. Representative Olson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce to you Lydia Lux, who is serving as my intern this morning. She's a junior at Sandy M. Christian High School, where her favorite classes are speech and debate, and is involved in the Albany Chamber of Commerce Youth Leadership Program. When she graduates, she wants to attend Biola University in California, major in international business or political science. I'll be talking to her about that. Lydia is involved in DECA, which is a marketing and business group. She also leads a Young Life group in Corvallis and spends a lot of time outside playing tennis and loves writing and photography. Please welcome her.
Your guests are welcome. Thank you very much. Representative Garrard, again.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My young intern visiting with us this morning is a Frenchman. His name is Matthew Chalon, and he is currently attending the Gilkey International Middle School as an eighth grader. Likes to play soccer and ski whenever possible, living in Oregon, and he's lived in Seattle. He enjoys traveling, and he goes to France every year, so I'm envious, Matthew, as well as other states in the United States. By the way, he was raised speaking French with his dad and English with his mom, which renders Matthew fluent in both French and English. So welcome, Matthew.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any further courtesies? See none? Verification of a quorum. The clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. All other members present except Reed, Roblin, and Thatcher, excused. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform that the Senate has passed Senate Bill 64, 449, 559, 562, House Bill 2250, 2251, 2562, adopted H.J.R. 10, passed the following House bill as amended by the Senate, House Bill 2065.
First readings, memorials, and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2040 relating to roadside assistance. House Bill 2386 relating to voter registration and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2560 relating to county clerk recording of instruments. House Bill 2759 relating to recordation of instruments and county records. House Bill 2822 relating to ways of necessity for private sewer lines. House Bill 2871 relating to reinstatement fee.
Bills read second time are passed to the third reading. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill in a short summary.
House Bill 2475 relating to cargo container property tax exemption extends cargo container property tax exemption to June 30, 2014.
The question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2475. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Yeah.
Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Aye. Jensen votes aye. Representative Wisnett is off the floor. House Bill 2475, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in short summary.
House Bill 2653, related to corporate income taxation and prescribing an effective date, removes exception to standard income apportionment method that provides for double-weighted sales factor in apportionment formula as applicable to forest products industry taxpayers.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2653. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Edwards, how do you vote? David Edwards, how do you vote? You vote. Representative David Edwards votes aye. Representative Hovey, how do you vote? Hovey votes aye. House Bill 2563, having received the constitutional majority, is declared. House Bill 2653 is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill in short summary.
House Bill 2654, related to local option taxes, clarifies that apportionment provisions apply to local option taxes imposed by county or roads.
The question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2654. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Representative Clem, do not see him. Representative Clem, off the floor. Representative Riley, how do you vote? Riley votes aye. Representative Cowan, how do you vote? Cowan votes aye. House Bill 2654, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2111, relating to Public Charter School Development Fund and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2111. Recognize Representative Van Orman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today for House Bill 2111, which comes from the Education Committee with a unanimous do-pass recommendation. This bill removes the Public Charter School Development Fund from the accounting system. The fund was created in 1999 to help process loans to charter schools that were funded by federal grants. The federal law has since changed to no longer allow these types of grants, and so this bill removes a fund that would otherwise go unused. All loans from the fund have been repaid, so there are no fiscal or revenue impacts associated with this bill. House Bill 2111 will not impact charter school funding in Oregon. Federal grants, including those for charter schools, are handled by the Department of Education and the State Board of Education. The current $16.5 million federal grant for charter schools in Oregon will not be affected by passage of this bill. The Department of Education has checked with the Attorney General's office and the Treasurer's office to make sure nothing was affected before recommending this change. Thank you. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion. Recognize Representative Springer, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is simply a housekeeping tool. This is not going to compromise charter schools. And as the good representative stated, it was in reference to funds that were deposited many years ago when the charter school movement began and was effective in Oregon. So I encourage your aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Recognize Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, a lot of times we use the word housekeeping around here, and when I hear that, I like to check it out and make sure that it is just a little sweeping out of the cobwebs at the corners. So I called Mr. Mark Jeffrey, who is kind of Oregon's poster child for charter schools, and he actually drove to Salem to sit in on this committee hearing to listen to Mr. Morgan Allen from Department of Education explain the process for these funds. And I was convinced, and so was Mr. Jeffrey, that this truly is housekeeping, so I urge your aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Van Orman, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Everyone has voted. Okay, House Bill 2111, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed.
Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2344, relating to discovery of sexually explicit material.
Question now arises upon third reading final passage of House Bill 2344. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2344 comes to you today at the request of a person and an organization that I have tremendous respect for. The first is Attorney General Hardy Myers, and then also the Attorney General's Sexual Assault Task Force. Hardy Myers and the Attorney General's Sexual Assault Task Force began working on this bill over a year ago in response to concerns that they had about the safety and the accidental distribution of evidence when there is a victim of sexual assault and there are video or audio recordings of these materials. One case that we heard about in the committee process involved a child who had been the victim of sexual abuse at the hands of a family member. And this person had videotaped these assaults, had depictions of these things. The prosecutor went to the judge and asked to have a protective order on these materials, and the judge declined to give that protective order. As a result, the prosecutor was required to make copies of these materials that depicted this event happening to this child. And when given to the defendant then distributed them among the family members of this young child. And it was very, very upsetting and humiliating to the young child. And this raises a very difficult and a legitimately difficult question. When you are trying to protect the rights and the dignity of a person that's been a victim, and at the same time protect the civil liberties and the legal rights of a defendant that's been accused of a crime. Because one of the things that's most important is that we're not convicting people that aren't guilty, and we must make sure that a defendant always has access to a robust defense. So as I'm carrying this bill, I want to acknowledge the importance of that point of view in this discussion. So what this bill would do would be to come into line with what the federal law currently is around materials that involve these graphic depictions of minor children and expand that to cover adults as well. The idea being if you're a victim, that redistribution of the materials, the harm to the victim is the same if the point of the policy is to protect that victim from further humiliation. And so what the bill says is that these materials would be kept in a secure law enforcement facility. And to access those materials, the defendant or the defense team would need to come to this facility. This is really the same process that's currently used for other types of evidence that are difficult to handle. Things like bloody clothing or drug evidence, weapon evidence. There's already processes and procedures in place for that. What this bill also says, it explicitly requires that the defense have ample opportunity to have access to these materials. And if they do not, in that case, then the materials would still need to be copied and sent to that defense team. So, for example, if the defense expert was in Texas and they couldn't get to the secure law enforcement facility, that would go there. And again, this is also in the control of a secure place. So it could also go to a jail so that the defendant could have access to see the information that was a very important part of their case as they made decisions about how to go forward. The other problem that we heard from local district attorneys during the hearing process is that the technical aspects of making the copies of these materials are very difficult for prosecutors. In the case where it involves children, they're actually being asked to reproduce materials that are contraband or illegal because they're visual depictions of sex acts involving minors. But what's even more difficult for them is many of our local agencies don't have in their facility the photocopying and other equipment that's necessary to make these copies. And so instead, they're having to go to Kinko's or Office Max, and they're making those copies there, and then they get stored on that internal drive. Colleagues, I think that this is a very good bill that protects the interests of these individuals who have been victimized. I do want to acknowledge, however, that there is a very important discussion that's going on about this. I anticipate, in fact, I know that there will be further discussion about this on the Senate side. I plan to continue to engage in those conversations, and in fact, I already have, including meeting with the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. This is a bill that I think is that the Sexual Assault Task Force brought forward and listed as one of their two priorities for this session because of their interest in protecting victims of sex crimes. And I am confident that when we get this bill to the governor's desk, it is going to do that and also protect the right to a robust defense. So I would encourage your aye vote, and thank you for your attention.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Our rules prohibit us from suggesting motives of any of our members, but I'm going to step over the line and say that I believe every single person in this room supports the purpose of this bill, and most, in fact, will vote for it in this particular form. But I am troubled at the moment in the particular form of the bill and the balance between protecting the rights of victims, which are very important, and protecting the ability of a defendant to prepare properly and to get a fair trial. I believe it would be relatively easy to improve this bill, and I'm hoping by sending this message, just as my colleague from Corvallis and Philomath has just done, that this will be changed and will come back to us in a form
all 60 of us will feel comfortable voting yes on. I am going to be a no vote today because I have a problem with the bill in its current form, and I'm looking forward to the ability to vote yes for it when it comes back in an improved form from the Senate. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I join with the concerns of the representative from the Historic Tuolumne Valley with some of the details of the bill, and I also certainly join with the carrier of the bill in the intent of the bill. I have discussed the issue with the person who is most likely to be responsible for managing this bill in the Senate, and I'm confident that the concerns that have been raised will be addressed in the Senate, and therefore I plan to vote in favor of the bill, although I agree that there are some substantive difficulties with the bill, even while the intent of the bill is very important, and we need to adopt a bill with this intent. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues,
to the bill.
This bill came out of the Judiciary Committee. We discussed it quite a bit. This morning I met with Senator Floyd Prozonsky, who's the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, told him about this bill and asked him and informed him we'd be sending over some amendments with it, and he is going to work with all parties concerned to fix it. It's a good basic bill. It does need a little bit of fine-tuning. That will be done on the Senate side. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wasn't originally going to speak to this. To the bill. Colleagues, next month is Child Abuse Prevention Month in Oregon and around the country. And this bill would give a lot of these victims and their families a real boost of hope for some improvements in our system. And I hope you will support this bill today, if not for any other reason, but to give them that sense of hope. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close?
Briefly, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to thank my colleagues for the discussion. I look forward to continuing to work with you and the Senate, and I urge your aye vote, and thank you for your attention.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Bence, how do you vote? Bence votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Bailey, how do you vote? Bailey votes aye. House Bill 2344, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2498, relating to aviation safety and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2498. Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was merely asking my colleague, Representative Gilliam, if his picture on page 147 of the Blue Book was the same picture he used when he was a contestant on The Bachelor. And if you will open to that page, you'll notice. I rise to support and urge passage of House Bill 2498. It's a good bill that received unanimous vote in committee. It revises the language in RS 778.260 to better reflect the needs of the state's major port in protecting its facilities and operations by including all port properties, not just airports. It includes the port police and the relevant definitions of police officer and enforcement officer in the Oregon Vehicle Code, is focused on commercial aviation and amends the language of endangering aircraft, it creates a misdemeanor charge for possession of a weapon in the restricted areas of a commercial service airport. I know there are a few questions that are come up on this. I will offer a little bit of background, and then I'm happy to answer any questions people have. The background of this essentially was the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, and subsequent incidents have led to sweeping changes in federal regulations and broadened transportation security concerns to include marine and other transportation modes, which are gradually coming under the same level of regulatory oversight as the aviation industry. Marine security has its own set of federal regulations, including the need for site-specific facility security under the regulatory oversight of the U.S. Coast Guard. The Port of Portland has realigned its security organization to encompass all departments. Public safety, aviation security, marine security, and emergency management have been consolidated under one manager to facilitate cooperation and communication in securing the port's facilities and assets. It is foreseeable the port may be required by the federal government or may choose for operational purposes to assign port officers to critical operations similar to what is done in the Port of Seattle or other standalone port authorities throughout the country. Again, this has been a bill that has been worked for a long time. I think is significant for our public safety in our ports, and I urge an aye vote and available for the questions that I know are coming and also those that I don't know are coming.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
By naming the Port of Portland peace officers as, under statute, as police officers, will that change their status under the PERS retirement plan?
My understanding is that trained and sworn port officers already receive the higher police officer level of PERS. So my understanding is that this will have no impact on the PERS classification of port officers. I think we should, you know, trust in God and tie our camel and make sure that when it's on the Senate side, we also ask that question. But I've received assurances from three different sources that this won't have impact on PERS.
Representative Richardson.
Another question.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
On page one of the bill, lines 17 through 19 in part say the following. A person commits the crime of endangering an aircraft if they knowingly possess or control a firearm or dangerous weapon in a restricted access area. I didn't see any definition on access area, so could this be interpreted that a general aviation area that a pilot would no longer be able to carry a knife or a firearm on his own or her own aircraft?
I asked almost that precise question in committee about what the impacts on general aviation would be, not the folks who go to commercial airports, but the folks who, the people who use the Portland airport, if you pass flight craft, that's the general aviation airport. And the answer I received on the record was that this had no intended and also no anticipated impact on general aviation. I think there, if we want to, again, make sure that that is the case, it is sensible to communicate with the Senate side, you and I, and I appreciate you letting me know both your questions in advance. It was the kind of courtesy that was very appreciated and valuable. My clear sense is right now that it won't have an impact on general aviation, but I think it's worth making sure of that as we go forward.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, we understand the intention of this bill is to help make things safer in restricted areas where there's security and commercial aircraft. The wording of the bill is such that we have not defined restricted area, and so many of the bills that we pass, because we're not careful with the wording, have unintended consequences that go far beyond what was intended rightfully with the bills, you know, originally. This is one of those kinds of bills. A pilot should have the right to take a firearm onto his own aircraft if he chooses to. But aircraft, whether it's in the general aviation section or a commercial aviation section, quite often have access to each other. I mean, it's one long runway or multiple runways. There's taxiways, and it's very easy for airports to say restricted area is anything within the fenced boundary where the airplanes are located. So this bill, in my opinion, as it's worded, will either lead to litigation or merely be a preclusion of pilots in being able to take weapons onto their own aircraft. It goes beyond what was intended, and we should vote no on this bill and have it corrected on our side so that we're sure that it gets corrected. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Eagerly.
He does.
Thank you. This, as was pointed out, makes the security officer or port police officer, as they're called, a policeman equal to Oregon State Police or any other policeman. Can you tell me what sort of training these officers have?
I can. The port officers who are covered by this statute already receive the same training at DPSSD that other police officers receive. So it won't include, we won't be calling people police officers who don't receive the same kind of training as police officers. All we'll be doing is calling those who do, those who are.
Representative Riley.
Thank you.
Further, I can write what I just said down later if it's helpful to define what I said, which was confusing.
Further discussion. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate
To the bill.
I appreciate the eagle eye of the representative from Southern Oregon. The restricted access question that we were looking at in the Portland Airport was, we don't want somebody going back in, for example, a food delivery truck, going back in there along, among the commercial airlines with an unauthorized gun. There's a restricted, that's part of the federal restriction area, and that's what this, the legislative intent of this was, to prohibit guns from areas that were federally restricted. I agree that this doesn't appear to be clear, and we do need to fix it, but I believe we can fix it, pass it today and fix it. I would also like to note that the Port of Portland agrees that they cannot preempt state law regarding Oregon's concealed handguns license laws, and that was part of the negotiations on this bill. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield? He does.
Thank you. Does this bill, I assume, applies to other airports other than the airport controlled by the Port of Portland? Yes.
Although it will apply to, my understanding is it will apply to commercial airports, of which we have, and I should know exactly the answer, but I know Eugene counts, I know Portland counts, there's a couple that I'm not sure about, but commercial aviation.
Representative Barnhart.
Redmond and maybe Salem, I'm not sure what to say.
In discussion on the bill, if I may, I would simply say that I'm very anxious to get the restricted area definition clarified, because it appears to me that the issue raised originally by the representative from Southern Oregon would apply in Eugene and probably in some of the other commercial airports as well as in the Port of Portland. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Representative Smith, do you wish to close?
I do. I appreciate the questions. Representative Richardson, you didn't tell me you might vote no. You just said you had questions, so I hope we'll clarify that in the future. But but I would draw your attention to Section 4, subsections A and B. As used in this section, restricted access area means an area of a commercial service airport that is, colon A, designated as restricted in the airport security program approved by the Federal Transportation Security Administration, and B, marked at points of entry with signs giving notice that access to the area is restricted. I think that my response to both of those, and I forgive not offering that before, but I think that both of those would hopefully clarify the definition to restrict it away from general aviation, would make very clear the legislative intent. I should also know, as facts on the ground are concerned, that officers in airports, one of the changes is, and one of the things that was concerning people, was there would be posted signs prohibiting firearms, and if somebody had a conceal and carry permit, they would think the sign applied to them. The signs have been removed, with the exception of the restricted areas, which are after you've gone through security in commercial airlines. So even not only the definition under Section 4, but also the definition subsection B, marked at points of entry with signs giving notice,
those places are also restricted only to commercial airports after you've gone through security. So I think we've, you know, both tied and knotted and Velcroed. With that, I would just say I think this is a good bill. I think the questions were very important. I think the answers to those questions are why we were able to get a unanimous vote out of a Judiciary Committee who is concerned about some of the same issues. It's a good bill, deserves passage. I urge your aye vote.
The carrier has just closed. Representative Edwards? Okay. Those are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes aye. House Bill 2498, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2695, relating to recordation of instruments in county records.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2695. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2695 comes with a unanimous passage and recommendation for passage from the Ag and Natural Resource Committee. This is basically a pretty simple bill. This bill is pretty self-explanatory. I will give you some background. For the last three sessions, I've been trying to get the attorneys and the county clerks together to iron this out. They finally did. The county clerks are fine and support this bill. More importantly, this bill does not affect any recording fees. It is just a technical fix where when a specific recordation of a document happens, the clerk cannot refuse it if it meets state law. So it's kind of a housekeeping bill in one manner.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes aye. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Kotek votes aye. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Cannon votes aye. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? David Edwards votes aye. Representative Jensen, what purpose are you in the queue?
Return to courtesies.
Okay, one moment. House Bill 2695, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request permission to return to courtesies.
Representative Jensen requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to have you recognize Kathy Cadden, Libby Bovent, and Christine Cribbs. They are from Umatilla, which is in my district, the Umatilla Chamber. They're here seeking a little bit of our help as they're looking for other places to reside in Umatilla. So if you run into them, be nice to them and help them out all you can. Thank you.
Welcome to your capital. Are there any further courtesies while we're back at courtesies? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to return a courtesy to one of my colleagues for his very kind comment about my photograph. He should be reminded, however, Mr. Speaker, to use the monikers on the table and not our names, because then he would be able to say what I've sort of been waiting to say all session. My friend from the Bedrock District, and I just wanted to say thank you for your courtesy, and in return, thank you for never pulling your microphone all the way up for those of us that are or are not hard of hearing. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
I believe there's another segment on the agenda for constructive criticism, so you may want to hold that for later. Further courtesies, I reluctantly say Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To my honorable colleague from Seattle, I appreciate the comment. As a new member, I will make various mistakes. I imagine if I am ever fortunate or unfortunate enough to be an older member, I imagine some of those mistakes will continue. I don't rise merely to respond to my honorable friend, but also to say that I misspoke earlier at least once when I, in response to your...
You know, Representative Smith, this may actually more appropriately come under remonstrances if this
are
you is
sure?
related to the bill. This is a time for courtesies, recognizing extending courtesies to the House to individuals.
So I apply to my previous statement about my youth and mistakes. I'm happy to rise again if that is your preference.
We'll talk to you under remonstrances.
Nice.
Are there any further courtesies? Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The clerk will read the resolution.
SJM 5, urging Congress to enact legislation creating Office of the National Nurse.
The question now rises upon final reading and adoption of SJM 5. Representative Dembrough, please pull things back together.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And this is a topic that should not only bring us together, but uplift us. I carry to you Senate Joint Memorial 5, which passed unanimously in the Senate and unanimously in the House Health Care Committee. It urges Congress to enact legislation to create an Office of the National Nurse. This legislation will take the existing position of Assistant Surgeon General and turn that position into our National Nurse. It gives prominence and value to the crucial role that nurses play in caring for us and for our loved ones. The office will place a particular focus on community and public health, on preventative care, on shortages in the nursing workforce, and on efforts to recruit and educate more nurses. Colleagues, this is a special bill for me because the effort to create the Office of the National Nurse had its genesis with two of my colleagues at Portland Community College, nursing instructors Terry Mills and Elisa Schneider, and their students. Their grassroots efforts led to a nationwide campaign bringing together thousands of nurses and supporters from all over the nation. And I should tell you that my own daughter, who's a nurse practitioner, first heard about this while practicing in North Florida. I was very excited, signed on, and asked me to support it. Well, of course, I had been supporting it from day one. This bill has led to H.R. 4903 in the U.S. Congress, was recently introduced, and now has nearly 50 co-sponsors, including all five representatives from Oregon. Four states have passed similar legislation. And colleagues, I urge you to make Oregon the fifth. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Dembrough, do you wish to close?
Office of the National Nurse. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Excuse me, that the memorial should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Reed, how do you vote? I'm sorry, Representative Reed is excused. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. SJM 5, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 64, relating to school finance and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 449, related to historic highway. Senate Bill 559, related to motion for intervention in juvenile dependency proceedings. Senate Bill 562, related to Oregon Law Commission and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the first time were passed. The speaker's asked for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 286, related to foreign country judgments. Senate Bill 370, related to limited judgments.
Bills read for the second time were passed. The third reading calendar. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Remonstrances. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In response to a question earlier from the good representative from Central Lane and Linn counties, I misspoke when I said the bill applied to all of our ports. It applies only to the Port of Portland, which isn't just in Portland, but is just the Port of Portland. So let me make that clarification. And let me also say, and I've avoided doing this for the most part because we new members recognize it's our duty to listen and learn as much as anything else, but I've got to say, in comment to my good friend, representative from Oregon's Christmas Tree District, it's been an honor to serve with you. And one of my favorite things about this process is even as much as we disagree and as how powerfully we might differ in our philosophy, how much fun it has been to work with so many of you and how we have been able to be to disagree without being disagreeable. So thank you. Yeah, I can speak up for you, my deaf friend.
Further remonstrances. Representative Barton.
Mr. Speaker, I turn to announcements.
We're under remonstrances. You may say pretty much whatever you want.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Unfortunately. Within the rules of the House.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, perhaps you've heard of Batman and Robin, Bonnie and Clyde. So too, Olson and Barton work together in general mischief, metal theft, as well as birthday celebrations. Representative?
Representative, are you done, Representative Barton?
I was wondering if perhaps a dual microphone might be extended in this circumstance.
Representative Barton requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules to allow Representative Barton and Representative Olson to share the mic for remonstrances. Is there objection?
You don't hear it, do you? You don't hear any.
Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Olson and Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and Representative Barton. Hopefully you're Robin, not Batman. Okay. All right.
Never mind.
It's a good thing. Okay. Hey, this is a great opportunity for us today. I was looking at some verses in the book of Proverbs, and one of those that just popped out at me was, it's a quote that says, "A wife of noble character is her husband's crown." Now, I mean, I can take time out to go into great detail on that and everything like that, but we know that Representative Berger is not just the crown of her husband, she's also the head of her family and wears the pants in her family. Okay? But she is also what I have always considered my big sister, too, over the last 4 years here, and I will probably pay dearly for this. But we have a number of things that both Representative Barton and myself would like to share on behalf of all of you here for her, recognizing that it is her birthday, that she is the same number as what the House holds for representation of 60. So, you know, please bear with us.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, in keeping with my age, level of maturity, and general demeanor, I would like to present the representative with my own set of golf clubs. This is my personal set that I use often.
Thank you, Batman and Robin. Further courtesies, Representative Boone.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, further remonstrances. That's a
remonstrance.
My mistake. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Tough act to follow. I request permission to use a visual aid, please.
Representative Boone requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules to use a visual aid. Is there objection? So ordered.
Thank you. Colleagues, you all got one of these in your office or will be in the next couple of days. This pinwheel represents Pinwheels for Prevention in honor of Child Abuse Prevention Month. 31 years ago, I joined the Oregon chapter for the National Committee for the Prevention of Child Abuse. Having said that long, big mouthful, it's now called Prevent Child Abuse Oregon. Read this little thing, see who's on the board. I'm not on this board, I'm on the Children's Trust Fund board, but we work closely with them. Put your pinwheel up where people can see it, blow it often. Well, it's supposed to work. And take part in the events that will be coming during the month of April. You'll be hearing from me and others again and again and again. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we've had a little fun this morning, but I want to return to something just a little bit serious. And I was once told during remonstrances that that's oftentimes the time that people want to leave and they don't necessarily listen. But I'm asking you to pay particular attention to this today. Today marks the 6th anniversary of our involvement in the war in Iraq. And I think it's very important that you realize that just this morning, under the great leadership of our chair of the Veterans and Emergency Services Committee, our great representative from the Central Coast, I was able to go and attend what is the Oregon Reintegration Summit on Post-Deployment. It was a group of some legislators, congressional staff, military leaders, and about 100 to 150 community leaders that are all preparing for what to do better when our troops come home. I rise today to remind you that we're going to have significant legislation that's going to be asked of you to pass. And it's going to be oftentimes difficult in today's challenging times. We'll bring forward solutions with them, but it's absolutely important that we don't lose focus that on May 2nd and May 4th, we will have 3,000 of our military troops, citizen soldiers, leaving their families to go on a deployment. They don't get to choose their mission. They simply respond to the needs of our country. And they're responding honorably and admirably. And I want you to remember that as we continue to think, can we do this now? Now will be the time when they return to us in 20 months, hopefully each and every one of them. So I do rise to have us recognize, first of all, the 6th anniversary. My, how time flies. My daughters are now 8, 5, and 3. I also ask that you keep in mind the various things that we're discussing. Some are fun, and there's humor in all. But there's other things very serious, and if we miss this opportunity now, it may never come again for us. So it's important we not only remember the soldiers that made the choice, but the families that are making the sacrifice while they're gone. It was encouraging to see that there were businesses involved in this. We're going to have, hopefully, with the help of our committee and all of us in this building, May 8th will be a Military Family Appreciation Day. We're working towards that, which will be 1 week after the deployment. But there'll be a lot of things that we do, so I simply rise today to remind us of that, to kind of keep us charged on the mission. And I ask, respectively, if you'll please join me, Mr. Speaker, in just a brief moment of silence for everybody to just reflect just briefly. Thank you. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, yesterday in your inboxes, you will have received the annual report from the Oregon Commission for Child Care. I am the House member on that commission. Every 2 years, is their job to present a report to the governor on the state of early childhood education, care and education here in the state. I urge you, I know you have many things in your inboxes, but I recommend the report. It is well written. It particularly speaks to the challenges in this down economy of the importance of providing child care subsidies to our working families. There's a section in there that talks about the economic impact of our child care providers and our child care community and what those jobs mean to communities, means to the economic impact in terms of services and supplies that are purchased. And of course, most importantly, what it means to working families who want to make sure that their children have access to stable, quality, early childhood care and education when they're working. We have many families who are struggling to stay working, and for those who are, we have to do what we can to help them. And if you recall, there were some reductions in the employment-related daycare program as part of the 0709 rebalance. It's a very important program for your constituents, for your working families to stay working, and I urge you to read the report, learn more about childcare system, system improvements, as well as subsidies for working families that are in the Oregon Commission for Child Care report. Thank you for your time.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today, with all the bad economic news that we continue to see every day around us, this body back in 2005 supported a bill that went through this process and the governor signed it to allow the NCAA basketball tournament to return to the state of Oregon. And today, as we're here, the games are going on at the Memorial Coliseum. Around that event brings in $10 million, estimates are, of economic value to our state. So I encourage us today to celebrate that there are some good things that are happening as a result of policies that we pass here that sometimes we don't see the benefits and the results of till many years down the road. But in a time where many people are suffering and needing jobs, there are some things that are happening as a result of this body that we did back in 2005 that are allowing people to continue to work and to enjoy the fruits that are coming to our state from all around this country during this weekend event. So enjoy the tournament, whether you like basketball or not. It is a good thing for the state of Oregon.
And Representative Birthday Girl.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. You know, somebody of my great and advanced age gets permission to remonstrate on all kinds of things, and I could remonstrate on things like the youthful lack of decorum of some of the freshman members occasionally in here, but I'm not going to do that. I could get very serious today because when your birthday is on this day, you remember when a war started on your birthday. And every year on my birthday, I remember that. But what I want to talk about today on my birthday is the people who help all of us get through our day. I walked into my office this morning and it was filled with balloons. If you don't believe me, go look. And it just lightened this day, and it reminded me that there were a whole bunch of people in this building who were up late after hours blowing up balloons for no other reason than to give us joy. So, my friends, on my birthday, go back to your offices and tell the staff who every day work so hard to make this process work and to make us look good how much you appreciate them, and all the people in the offices around here how much we appreciate them, because on my birthday, that's my wish for Michelle, who did this for me and who organized this, and all of the rest of you. This is a wonderful family down here, and I so deeply appreciate all of the members of this family and all of you. Thank you.
Well said. Adjournment. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Friday, March 20, 2009. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
And colleagues, I would urge you to listen to the motion that Representative Jensen just made. It is not a Monday motion. It is a Friday motion. We are in session tomorrow. Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 10 a.m. on Friday, March 20th, 2009. Without objection, the House is adjourned.